So in the rugby as a whole, all these various representative games in Gloucester and Cheltenham, all those, who are the guys that stand out, the entertainers, the jokers in the pack? Not necessarily wonderful rugby players, but the ones that provided the entertainment, shall we say.
Well, I suppose, most people who know what I'm going to say, Berto, I suppose. I mean, once Berto started talking, he never stopped. Whether it was on the field, off the field, in the bar, whatever, but he was a great character. But we had lots of guys. I mean, it's hard to bring out individuals, but I mean, the camaraderie and the relationship we had with everybody in those days was brilliant. We all got on, we all worked hard for each other. There were a few skirmishes out there at training when something didn't go quite right. And again, some of the hardest games I played in, and Ronnie will tell you, were Gloucester Trials.
Yeah.
I mean, they were evil.
Yeah.
We used to beat seven shorts of doodah out of each other. Because you wanted to get in the first team. But they were very competitive. But the answer to the question is, Berto is a standout, obviously. Another one, John Simonet. I mean, he was great. He was a magician. He used to put cigarettes through the back of my blazer, produce balls here and cars here. But he was a great, great, good rugby player as well.
So yeah. Have
can I take you back to South Africa again? Because that was your second tour with England, wasn't it?
Yeah, so 84, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 84, yeah. Quite a few of the guys didn't go on that. I'm pretty sure we won all our provincial games. We lost both the tests. The first test we didn't lose by much. But the second test we were doing really well. And all of a sudden, the bloke called Danny Herber decided he was going to wake up and start playing. And I think Hugh Davis from Coventry was the number 10. Not only did he run through him, he ran over him and scored, I think he scored three tries in the last 5 minutes, which made the score look a lot worse. But they were both competitive games, but it was hard out there. They're big men, and as we can see now, South Africa are a very, very good side, and they were a good side then as well. But it was a good tour. We didn't win the test, but I think we won our provincial games.
Did you see much of South Africa while you were there?
Oh yeah, I mean I'm very lucky. I've been to South Africa, I think it's 8 times on various rugby tours. And the first rugby tour I went on there was back early in the 70s with a team called the Public School Wanderers, which was, I'd never heard of them, but I was asked to go. And on that, there were people like Peter Wheeler, Fergus Slattery, John Watkins. There's some really good players on it. And we went to Rhodesia mainly and played out there. So it's a great country to go to. Great country, lovely places to see. And they're good rugby players, and that's what I like. It's very competitive.
And you didn't have to go to a public school to play for Wanderers?
No, I didn't have to go to a public school, no. Hogglecock Secondary Modern was my limit. Academics was there had been an England cap in academics, I probably wouldn't have got it. But there we go.
They never had a secondary modern Wanderers.
That's right.
So it was in 1984.
I thought that was 83. 84.
And is that the season you finally finished rugby?
I finished the following year, 84, 85, I think it was, I remember. But
do you remember your last game?
Last game was Nottingham away for United.
Oh, right.
I thought, well, I've won that. Cause you got to the stage where you get up on a Saturday morning, I couldn't even walk down the stairs. I was 36 then, I think, 36. And unfortunately, my last game at Nottingham away, I got sent off.
What, enforcing?
Basically, I did not agree with some of the referee's decisions, and I told him. So he told me to get off the field. And Freddie Reid was running the touch, and I was just walking on. And then Freddie rallied up, ran to the referee, stuck the flag in his face, and in no uncertain terms, told him what he could do with the game and running the touch. And he was sent off from the touchline. So our last game for Gloucester, Freddie and myself got sent off. But probably not the best way to finish a career, but it was quite funny.
And Fred wasn't even playing.
But you know, I think I didn't even realise, but you can send the Dutch judge off. But he did.
And what about your last game for the first team? Can you remember where that was?
Oh, I haven't got a clue, no. I honestly don't know.
I think it was Neath.
Yeah.
You have no major collection, recollection of that game.
I'm going down there. It wasn't an easy place to go to, I can tell you.
Right, so you finish your rugby, and then you get involved on the admin side, for want of a better description, with Glossy. You became team secretary, was it, at that stage?
Well, the first thing I did was, when I finished, I basically wanted to watch Rob play. He was at Cheltenham College, so I didn't actually watch Gloucester first team or United team for about most part of the season, so I thought it was important. Blood and thicker than water, I'd go and watch Rob play at Cheltenham College. He was captain, and they had a very successful season there, and I think they went unbeaten for the season. And then Brinny rang me at the end of that season, because he was, I think he was the club chairman then, was he?
Yeah,
I'm sure he was. He said, how do you fancy running the Gloucester under-21s? So I said that, because I love that era of rugby. I love to see the young lads play, and I think it's good to bring lads on, local lads especially. So I then got a little group of guys together, which was, I was like in charge of it, the manager. I don't like being called manager really, but Jim Jarrett was my assistant manager, God bless him. And then I had Pete Kingston and Viv Woolley as my coaches. And we got a good team together. People like, I mean, Greening was playing, Rob was playing, Mark Cornwall. It was successful. And quite, I think we took quite a few players from the 21s into the first team. We had good fixtures in England and in Wales. And it's probably two of the enjoyable years I really had at Gloucester, bringing young lads on.
So who did you play against?
Leicester, Coventry. We went down into Wales, we played Cardiff on the 21s, we played Newport, we played quite good side. We didn't have a massive fixture list, we didn't play every week, but we played enough to keep it going. And we played at Trot Plot Court. Yeah, we didn't play here, train here, but it was good fun.
Right. And you then got more involved with the club itself?
After I did that, Brittany then asked me to be team, was Fred team secretary, wasn't he?
He was, I think, yeah.
Yeah, Fred was team secretary, so then Brittany asked me to be, I was team secretary then, right. Which was just basically, I used to attend selection committee meetings and then put the team up, announce the team, whatever, and make sure then that all the players were available, the coaches were available to get the teams to the games and whatever. It was just making sure for the match day purposes, everything was spot on for the coaches and the players knew exactly what was going on.
Were you still in the police force at that stage?
No, I'd left the police force then. I came out in 1984, I think it was, after I came back from South Africa.
When you finished rugby?
Yeah, and I then decided to get out of the police force, but because having Ronnie Etheridge for 3 months was enough to drive anybody out of the police force. So, my dad was a builder, probably most people know, he was a civil engineer builder. So I decided I'd like to go into do a bit of construction. So in 1984 I started up JHF Construction, which is still going now, which Robbie runs, and he's in charge of that now. I have nothing to do with it.
And did JHF Construction have any work down here at Kingstown to get involved in on that side?
Yeah, we did. I forget when it was, but it was when there was that awful disaster at one of the football clubs.
Yeah.
Hillsborough?
Yeah.
And they changed the health and safety legislation.
And then all the health and safety came into sports grounds, and Fordy rang me up and he said, oh, I want you to come down and dig a couple of holes, Fitz, and just put a bit of reinforcing in. So I said, fine. So I came down and we met these various structural engineers, and there was also a guy on the council from the health and safety, and he turned up with a wad of paper. It was about 6 inches thick of what we had to do. So the two little holes and the bit of reinforcing turned into about £300,000 worth of complete restructuring how the safety barriers were at King's Home. And a little story that was, people are always interested, we had to put new barriers the whole length of the shed. And well, you know here, but most of this ground is ash. The tongue was ash anyway. When we built the stand, it was all ash. But we had to dig a trench. This trench was 2 metres by 1 metre deep. No, 2 metres deep, and we couldn't get the machine in there. So I woke up one night and I thought to myself, Richard Mogg and Bob Phillips, who worked for the Water Board. Because they were like little moles, they could dig holes anywhere. So
this is Bob Phillips, the prop?
Yeah, Bob Phillips, the prop, Richard Mogg, who we all know. So I said to Rick, and the other guy was Wayne Birchley, who I think is no longer with us, God bless his soul. And then I said to the boys, I've got to dig this trench from there to there, the length of the shed. Can you do it? I tell you what, they did it. They turned up, they had a fortnight off work, and they dug it all out by hand. And it was incredible. It was the only way we could do it. I mean, it was 6 foot by 6 foot, this hole, and then we filled it with concrete, put the barriers on. But they dug it all out by hand. But it was nice to use the players, and they loved doing it.
Yeah.
I did pay them as well.